Delightful to have all of you in the audience this morning. Appreciate the fact that you've come and you've come back. We have visitors for at least the second time, as I remember, and very glad that you've chosen to be a part of the studies. We're missing some of the older folks today, though I noticed that. Missing Chuck and Esther. You know, they'll be married 67 years come April. Missing Harold and Lola. You know, they've already been married 67 years. I want to think about the great privileges and blessings in marriage today. I want to welcome all of you who are visiting. I hope that you'll be encouraged. Also want to let you know some good news in case you haven't read email from later last night. There was a young man that was here last Sunday morning. His name is David Egan. He's been here a few times. He's a dear friend of a guy named Tony Fisher. Tony was led to the Lord by Andrew Bean and his own search for God. And now Tony has been studying with his friend David. And David was attacked by a very serious illness that destroyed the myelin sheath around his brain. And for the last year, David has been seeking for recovery from physical loss, ability to speak, and lots of other things. He's been to Mayo several times. Was in Mayo last Tuesday and Wednesday. He planned to be back late Wednesday night, and I was hinted at by Tony that he planned to be baptized on Thursday. Although Tony didn't explicitly say that, David never made it back to West Lafayette. Got snowed in and ended up getting back to Indy, but Tony lives just north of Indy. And so on Thursday evening, Tony baptized David into Christ. David said last Monday, if it had not been for this illness, I might not have searched for God like I have now. Several of you have had a part in David's coming to the Lord. Some of you said, well, we can give him a ride. Others of you did give him a ride. Others of you took him out for lunch. And at one lunch occasion, someone said something about, man, that sermon on marriage Alan did was sure negative. And I thought about that. And there were parts of it that were. And others of you, when I ask you just point blank, did the lesson come across as kind of, and one young man just said, negative? Ouch. And then I get an email that said, you know, you didn't really think about everybody and what you said. And you know, and the old guys were saying, yeah, give it to them. And the young people were saying, man, I've just been beaten up badly. And so what we all need is balance. And so this is an effort to find balance in that message. I have for over 30 years been emphasizing that it is Christ that is the hero, not the church. And so that sometimes leaves people with thinking that Alan's saying that the church is not important. That again is out of balance. And so there are a couple of different goals that I have. One is to see the beauty of the bride of Christ. To see who he died for, who he loves. And the second is to recognize that our marriage can be beautiful. Now, I'm not saying that every marriage is. And sometimes we wake up one day and we realize, wow, this is a whole lot harder than I thought. And that I can't control anybody else except for myself. And so those are a couple of goals that we'd like to address in our study this morning. But it just so happens that somebody came up with another national week. And wouldn't you know it, February 7th through 14th is National Marriage Week. So says the executive director, Sheila Weber. She says, research shows that married people do have greater levels of happiness, more financial stability, better health, and longer lives. We want people to learn how valuable it is to be together. People really do want life-lasting love. Well, I'm sure that's true. I don't think we have to do all the research to recognize that. But you know what? Not everybody has that. And sometimes as you progress in your marriage, you find out this is really difficult. This is really hard. I can't control what other people think and what other people do. Some of you have just noticed, just in the brief exposure to Harold and Lola, that Harold just lives to serve his wife. That as he's lying in the hospital for almost a week, he can't stand it. He's got to get home to take care of his lovely bride of 67 years. Sometimes it's interesting how Chuck will just kind of come down and sit down, and then Esther will come in behind him. But you just see them having worked as a team for nearly 67 years. And so some wise young man decided that if we're going to talk about marriage, maybe we ought to listen to the people who've been there for a long time. And so one research exercise that was conducted this last week was, let's interview Harold and Lola. And that's some of the best advice you can ever get. I can remember sitting on a hillside after just mowing that hillside cemetery with my grandpa and talking to him about marriage before Cindy and I got married. And I can remember the words that grandma would say about that. And so that's just really great to talk with people who've done it well and ask them for their perspective. I'd like to suggest to you that there's a greater role model than Harold and Lola. That Jesus Christ is the great role model of what marriage is intended to be. And so I'd like you to look with me, if you would, to think about Old Testament pictures first of God's picture of marriage. He says in Isaiah 61 and verse 10, I delight greatly in the Lord. My soul rejoices in my God. For he has clothed me with garments of salvation and arrayed me in the robe of righteousness. As a bridegroom adorns his head like a priest, and as a bride adorns herself with her jewels. Isaiah continues with these pictures in 62 and verse 5. He says, for as a young man marries a virgin, and as the bridegroom rejoices over the bride, so shall your God rejoice over you. And then there's that painful reminder that the love that began doesn't always last. And as Jeremiah is speaking for God, as he sees the relationship, his marriage going down, that his beautiful young bride no longer loves him as she once did. It's almost reminiscent of Hosea. And Jeremiah 2 says, go and proclaim in the hearing of Jerusalem, I remember the devotion of your youth, how as a bride you loved me and followed me through the desert, through a land not sown. Israel was holy to the Lord, the first fruits of his harvest. But you kind of get a foreboding that it's not always going to be that way. But when you get to the end of Jeremiah, when you get to 33 and following, you start seeing the picture of this beautiful bride coming back to her husband. And what a beautiful picture that is. Now, I'd like for you to do an exercise with me now. Without looking at the screen, could you open the Bible in whatever form you find it and look in Ezekiel chapter 16? Ezekiel's about the middle of the Old Testament. For some of us, we're really glad to have these things where we can find the document. If you get to Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, if you've gotten to Daniel, you're just past Ezekiel in the Old Testament. And Ezekiel chapter 16, for delicateness reasons, I'm not going to read the first seven verses, but you might want to as an adult. But beginning in Ezekiel chapter 16 and verse 8, God says in the beginning, in the middle of that verse, I gave you my solemn oath and entered into a covenant with you, declares the sovereign Lord, and you became mine. I bathed you with water and washed the blood from you and put ointments on you. I clothed you with an embroidered dress and put leather sandals on you. I dressed you in fine linen and covered you with costly garments. I adorned you with jewelry. I put bracelets on your arms and a necklace around your neck. And I put a ring on your nose and earrings on your ears and a beautiful crown on your head. So you were adorned with gold and silver. Your clothes were of fine linen and costly fabric and embroidered cloth. Your food was fine flour, honey, and olive oil. You became very beautiful and rose to be a queen. Now, isn't that every young lady's picture of her wedding day? Doesn't every young lady dream of the beauty and the ornateness, the splendor and the glory of her wedding day? And she does not just think about her wedding. She's anticipating that all of the expectation of that honeymoon is going to go and last all of her life. But the story of Ezekiel is, here was a young lady who was made by the one who chose to love her, beautiful. But it didn't last. At least not for now. But this is going to be a positive lesson, yes? And so as we think about this, we think about the bride of Christ. And we think about the desires of a bride. I'd like you to think about, isn't this what every bride wants? Love? That someone would sacrifice and protect her? That she wants relationship. She wants exclusive relationship. She wants him to have eyes only for her. She wants, and would you allow me this, redemption? She wants somebody to rescue me. She wants somebody to pay the price for me. She wants to be a pure, clean, and holy bride. And she wants to share in the success of her husband. If it's his success, it's her success, because we are a team. Isn't that what every bride wants? At least it used to be. I think really, for most every bride, it still is. I think this is what you want. I think this is what I want as a bride of Christ. And so in order to share in those things, there's some qualities that need to be acquired, some things that need to be developed, and some things that we don't have a lot of control over. But one thing we can do is we can learn to love. It's interesting that Abraham just plans the marriage of his son, and Rebekah comes and she learns to love Isaac. They didn't know each other. They didn't get to date or anything. She comes and, all right, I'm your wife. You're my husband. And she learned to love him, and he learned to love her, even though they had no courtship, no dating whatsoever. I'd like to suggest that Christ has done that for us. He has loved us when we were helpless, when we were hopeless, when we were ungodly, when we were enemies. Christ looked at us and said, I'm going to love you. He deliberately, intentionally chose to love us when we were unlovable. My, what a husband. And then as we think about the relationship, John the Baptist says he's talking about, I'm not the one. I'm just the friend of the bridegroom. He makes it very clear that the bride belongs to the bridegroom. There is a belonging. There is a sense of ownership. There is a sense of, this is the only person for me. It is exclusive in its nature. And then this one may throw you a little bit, but I do think we all desire redemption. We all desire rescue. That we all want to be rescued from some difficulty that we face. Oftentimes young people feel like, I've just got to get out of the impression of my parents' home. Redemption, a recognition of need. The bride of Christ recognizes her need for redemption. She sees herself as dead in sins. And so she delights greatly in the Lord. My soul rejoices in my God, for he has clothed me with garments of salvation and arrayed me in a robe of righteousness. As a bridegroom adorns his head like a priest, and as a bride adorns herself with her jewels. She longs for the salvation, for the redemption, for the rescue that is provided by her husband. And then there's the picture of the need to be cleansed, to be pure, to be holy. And based upon who we are in him, we can have those qualities. In Revelation 19, and this will not come up on the screen. In Revelation 19, we see the contrast between the prostitute who's riding on the beast. We see the prostitute who is swirling around her cup of the blood of the saints. We see the woman who is immoral and destroys anything and everything she can get her hands on. But then in chapter 19, there's the bride, the wife of the Lamb. And the bride, the wife of the Lamb, we are told, let us rejoice and be glad and give him glory. For the wedding of the Lamb has come, and his bride has made herself ready. Fine linen, bright and clean, was given her to wear. Parenthetically, fine linen stands for the righteous acts of the saints. There's some things a bride can do to be prepared to enjoy the marriage with the Lamb. The emphasis in Ephesians chapter 5, as Emerson read to us, is the idea that he chose us. He chose us in him before the foundation of the world. And blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who has blessed us with every spiritual blessing in the heavenly places in Christ. just as He chose us in Him before the foundation of the world, that we would be holy and blameless before Him. Understand in the marriage relationship of the Lamb, that being married to Christ, we don't come to Him holy and blameless. We are made holy and blameless by our coming to Him. He is the one who accomplishes that in us with our cooperation. And that's very important to see. And so here is the bridegroom, and He rescues us, and He makes us pure. He makes us holy. He takes away the spots, the stains, and the wrinkles, and He makes us His holy and blameless people, but not without our cooperation. And so we see the greatness, again, the picture of the bridegroom. But as we think about that, notice in Ephesians 2, verses 4 and 5, "But God, being rich in mercy, because of His great love with which He loved us, even when we were dead in our transgressions, made us alive together with Christ. By grace you've been saved." And so the picture of this bridegroom is not one who can't see the spots. It's not one who can't see the wrinkles. It's not one who can't see the rebellion and the wretchedness of our past. This bridegroom says, "I love you anyway, and I choose you for me. You are mine, and I'm going to cleanse you. I'm going to purify you. I'm going to make you my holy, blameless bride." There is no perfect specimen among men and women. We are all those who've transgressed the will of God as we've come to have knowledge of Him. But Jesus says, "I choose you anyway, because I want people who will love me," and we get to choose whether we'll love Him back. He doesn't control that part of the relationship. He chooses to love. And so as we think about holiness, and think about holiness in marriage, in 1 Peter 3 we're reminded, "Let not your adornment be merely external, braiding the hair, wearing gold jewelry, or putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. For in this way, in former times, the holy women also who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands." Remember, this is about the bride of Christ. And so as the bride of Christ, what we share with the bridegroom is a holy and submissive heart that bows with respect to our husband, Jesus. And because of what He's done, and because of what He's accomplished, we get to share in His glory. Look with me, if you would, in Ephesians chapter 3. And again, this is not going to come up on the screen. In Ephesians chapter 3, I just kept seeing more and more as I kept reading through Ephesians. Chapter 3, verses 8 through 10. How could we not give emphasis to the bride, to the church? Paul says, "To me, the very least of all saints, the grace was given to preach to the Gentiles the unfathomable riches of Christ, and to bring to light what is the administration of the mystery, which for ages has been hidden in God, who created all things, in order that the manifold wisdom of God might now be made known through the church to the rulers and the authorities in the heavenly places." This was God's eternal purpose. So can I get you to think about that for a minute? Is the church the beauty of the plan? Or is it that Christ chose to love us and to die for us and serve us? Is that not what shows the manifold wisdom of God? That God would choose to love unlovables. God would choose to love sullied, soiled, and stained, sinful people. God would choose for His bride ones who were not worthy, but would be made worthy by the sacrifice of the bridegroom. The manifold wisdom of God is shown through the church and authorities and principalities and powers. Like, you love them? You chose them? Well, she's not beautiful. Do you know her past? Jesus says, "I know her past, and I choose her anyway, because she will now choose to love me, and she will choose to become a holy and blameless and spotless, beautiful bride because of her love for the bridegroom." God risked everything in choosing us to be His bride. He trusted that there would be people who would choose to love Him back, even though they recognize their own undoneness, their own ruined condition. There is no perfect bride-to-be. If you're thinking that I have got to wait until I find the perfect one, she is not out there. Just quit looking. You need to look for somebody who loves God more than they love you. And the woman who is God's woman is the woman who knows her past. But she now knows that by grace and by the love of God, I am not who I once was. And I am now clean and pure in God's sight. And that's what every man of God is looking for. A cleansed and redeemed and forgiven bride. And so when we look at Jesus, we look at what He does for her. He's going to present her to Himself, this exclusive relationship, as a radiant church, a radiant bride, without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. And when you see that picture in Revelation 21, I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, made ready as a bride adorned. NIV says beautifully dressed for her husband. I found it interesting that as I was looking at the original language, you know what the word adorned is? You see it there on the screen? Cosmeo. You ever heard of cosmetics? There's your word. What a woman wants to do is she wants to make herself as beautiful as she possibly can. And she uses cosmetics. And she uses clothing that will cause her to be attractive and beautiful and radiant. That's exactly what God's bride does. We want to use all of God's cosmetics. Guys, work with me on this. We want to wear the prettiest dress we can. We want to be the most attractive people of God. We want to adorn the doctrine of Christ Jesus, so that when our husband looks at us, he will say, "You are absolutely stunning. You're beautiful. And I choose you exclusively." And so as we see that picture then, we need to see the bridegroom as well. What does a bridegroom want? Does a bridegroom not want to love his wife? He chooses her. He's looking for a certain type of bride. He's looking for a relationship. He wants an exclusive relationship. He's looking to be able to redeem that bride. He's looking for a clean and pure and holy bride. He wants to provide every need for that bride. And the one thing that he cannot control but he desires deeply is the respect of his bride. Isn't that true, guys? Yeah, I see some nods in the guy. That's what a guy wants. That's what Jesus wants. That's what Jesus describes that he was looking for as a bridegroom. So think about those relationships developed. He chose to love her. He didn't have to. He loved her because he made a choice to love. He loved and gave himself up for her. Look at the relationship. He wants it to be an exclusive relationship. Paul understands that in 2 Corinthians 11. He says, "I am jealous for you with a godly jealousy. I promised you to one husband, to Christ, so that I may present you as a pure virgin to him." Remember, we're thinking about the bride of Christ. Can any of us come to Christ without his redeeming power as a pure virgin? No. We've all been polluted. We've all been unfaithful. We've all loved the world at some point. But through what Christ has done, we can become that pure virgin. He wants us to continue in the relationship of purity. He wants an exclusive relationship with us in regard to redemption. Do you not want? Did he not want to be able to redeem? Did he not want to be able to pay the price, to offer the ransom, to sacrifice himself for his bride so that he could redeem her from what she could not redeem herself? Excuse me just a second. This seems to work for Ryan. We'll see if it'll work for me. redemption. Here is one who did for us what we could not do for ourselves. He was a kinsman redeemer as Boaz rescued Ruth. Christ rescued the struggling. Again, I did not mention Ezekiel chapter 16. I did not read verses 1 through 7. But the picture is absolute helplessness until God stepped in to rescue. And so we see the picture of Christ purchasing His bride, His church, with His own blood. How could anybody say the church is not important when Jesus gave His very life blood to purchase that relationship as a redeemer? But what this husband wants is purity from his bride. He has the ability to cleanse her. But please note this. His ability to cleanse her is dependent upon his own purity. Do you understand that? If Jesus was not who he needed to be, he could not offer himself as a ransom. He could not pay the price for us to be free from sin if he were not the one who was pure. And so a couple of passages briefly. He committed no sin. No deceit was found in his mouth. And so 1 Peter 1. But as he who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct. Be holy, for I am holy. Just a takeaway, guys. Do not try to make a wife holy and then determine that I'm not going to be holy. God's men set the pace, set the standard. God's men determine I will be pure first. Christ could not do for us if he did not do for himself. He's going to make her holy, Ephesians 5 says. He's going to cleanse her by the washing with the water through the word. But that required her cooperation, didn't it? She had to decide whether she wanted to be cleansed, whether she wanted to respond, whether she'd be willing to be baptized to have her sins washed away. And then we think about the provision. We think about the bridegroom, his ability to provide for needs. He wants to nourish her. Do you think Christ is able to nourish? Is he able to do exceedingly abundantly beyond all that we ask or think? Can you see the glory that's in the church based upon what the bridegroom has done? He's the great provider. He's the great nourisher. And then as we remember at Ted's funeral, cherish. Cherish is the word he uses to describe his relationship with his bride. I wondered what that word really meant. I knew what the song said, but the word cherish comes from the Greek word thalpo, and it simply means to keep warm. It's the idea of a mother putting her wings over her little ones. It's the idea of fostering tender care. Cherish. You can tell when husbands and wives cherish one another. And some of you come time after time seeking God, knowing that you're not nourished, knowing that you're not cherished by a physical spouse. But please know for sure that if you're in Christ, you have a spouse who nourishes and cherishes you. But the one thing in all that he can do for us, the one thing he cannot force, he will not force on us, is that we respect him. That is the choice of the bride. She chooses whether or not she will respect him. In a sense, and you may be critical of the phraseology, in a sense it's her gift to him. He can't force her to respect him, but he can respect his father. He can say, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work. He can say, as Hebrews 10 says, here I am. It is written about me in the scroll. I have come to do your will, O God. You cannot force your husband or your wife to love or respect you, but you can love and respect the bridegroom Jesus Christ. But you choose. He will not put you in a full Nelson. He will not force you to do so. I know there will come a day when every knee will bow. But for now, you choose whether or not you will respect. You choose whether or not you will love. We cannot force that even on our spouse. But Christ trusts and patiently waits for us to love and respect Him. I'd suggest to you that submission is the gift of the bride to her husband. So what do you want? I don't know what you want in marriage. I know lots of you are wanting to get married. And that's a beautiful thing. Please don't ever think Alan's negative on marriage. It's a wonderful gift. And God says it's a great blessing to those who find a wife. That's a good thing. Brides, do you want for you what God wants for you? Do you want love? Someone who will sacrifice for you? Someone who will protect you? Someone who will provide for you even at his own expense? Do you want exclusive relationship? I don't really know any couple who wants the other person to be sleeping around. And that's especially true in regard to Jesus. Do you want somebody who can pay the price to redeem you, to buy you back, to purchase you as their special possession? Do you want cleansing, purity? Do you want holiness in the relationship? Do you want to share in the glory of the bridegroom, that his success is your success? And then as bridegrooms, do we love our wife? Do we choose? We chose her. Do we love her? Do we want exclusive relationship? I don't know any guy who's not going to say, yes, I want exclusive relationship. I'm afraid maybe I do after I said that. Those men are so miserable. Redemption. Don't we want the ability to rescue, to protect? Is that so chivalrous that we're no longer into that kind of thing? Does not every man want a clean and pure and holy bride? If that's what we want, that's what we should be. Do we not want to provide for every need emotionally, sexually, physically, and especially spiritually? And do we not want a bride who will respect us because we live respectably? So may I suggest finally, let's focus on what we are to be rather than to trying to change your spouse to be. You spend your time trying to fix her. You spend your time trying to fix him. It's a futile cause, I must tell you. All you can change is you. Aren't we wonderfully blessed to be married to a Christ who is perfect in every way? And He's waiting on us to, of our own volition, based upon our great love and respect for Him, to make the changes that would reflect His glory. There's an old song called Young Love, First Love. We can return to our young love, first love. We can go and proclaim in the hearing of Jerusalem, I remember the devotion of your youth. And we can return to that as the people did when they came back from captivity. And if your love for the bridegroom has grown weak and cold, you can return to a nurturing relationship that cherishes the beloved. If you've never entered into a covenant with Christ, the bridegroom, you can do so by learning to trust, respect, and obey Him. I hope that's helpful. I hope that if you're feeling like nobody would ever choose me as a bride, I've got a past. Hello, folks. We've all got a past. And Jesus has chosen to love us and to cleanse us, to redeem us and forgive us. But He calls upon us to make changes appropriate with His love for us, to live holy, blameless lives. But we cannot do that without His cleansing by the washing of water with the Word. And so those who want to be married to Christ are going to
gladly, quickly submit to Him as the bridegroom by being buried with Him in baptism so that they can rise to walk in a clean, beautiful, radiant new life as the bride of Christ. If you've not done that, won't you choose to marry Jesus even now as we stand and sing?